Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Welcome to the show today, listeners. I am very excited to introduce a guest that Jamie Todak, who was on like a week or two ago, told me about. She said that that was her internet resource, was the Frugal Green Girl. And so I reached out to her. I watched her YouTube videos, and they are just awesome. If you are interested in looking at some videos on YouTube, I really recommend her, because she's really detailed. I asked her in the pre-interview, I was like, are you a science major? Because she really went into like really good specifics of like, you know, not just how you do things, but like the whys and the reasons behind it, and very thorough explanations. So I think we're all going to learn a lot today. So welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast, Frugal Green Girl.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Cool. Well, we're excited to have you. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so I'm a wife and a mom. I have a couple of kids that I homeschool, and I also have a mostly work-from-home job where I am a rental manager. And so 14 years ago, I spent a year at a local community college learning plant and greenhouse sciences, and which is also known as horticulture. That gave me a good foundation for things. And then 11 years ago, my husband and I bought a little house on a tenth of an acre of total property, and then we started a little urban homestead, and we've had so much fun doing it, and I've learned a lot along the way. And so, you know, a few years ago I decided to start a YouTube blog, and it's also been tons of fun. So yeah.
Cool. And you know what else I was just telling the lady I was talking to this morning is that my guests, a lot of my listeners have been reaching out to me are urban gardeners, so they're going to be excited to hear your story too, because it'll inspire them and tell them some things they can do in an urban area. So I do kind of like to start the show talking about your very first gardening experience. You know, like, how old were you? Were you a kid, an adult? You know, what'd you grow? Who were you with? So do you want to tell us a little bit about, like, where you grew up? Did you grow up in Colorado?
I did grow up in Colorado, yeah. And my very first gardening experience was a long time ago, actually. It was in elementary school. My mom cut open a cantaloupe, and my brother and I were really curious if the seeds would grow, so we took an old, like, ice cream bucket, one of those one-gallon ice cream buckets, and we strained out some rocks from the soil we had around our house, and we planted the seeds in there, and they actually grew. It was really exciting. We were so excited to actually have something that would actually grow. We didn't even know that was going to, you know, work out, but it did. Anyway, but we were renters, and so I had a neighbor who threw some spark plugs in there, and they killed it, which kind of makes the story a little more sad, but it actually worked out to be a good thing because it really gave me a dream to be a homeowner someday, I mean, even at that young age. And so, you know, from the beginning, I've always kind of, you know, enjoyed repurposing things and, you know, saving seeds and just aspiring to be, like, a sustainable gardener. And so, you know, that really gave me a good, you know, like, a dream, a goal, and the motivation to get what I really wanted out of life. So I'm so happy to be a homeowner now and, you know, to have a space of our own and places to grow a garden, and it's been really fun.
Cool. I like that. Yeah, being a homeowner is just really nice, isn't it, to have a place that's your own?
Yeah.
All right. Well, then, do you want to share with us what organic gardening or friendly gardening means to you?
Sure. I mean, beyond just the regular, regulations that, you know, the stuff that you grow has to be non-GMO and pesticide and herbicide and, you know, chemical fertilizer free and stuff like that, you know. Mm-hmm. For me, it's far beyond that. It's really about a healthy lifestyle, and not just for me and my family, but, you know, just to do good for the environment and helping to take care of our planet, you know. It's such a beautiful place to live, and I really feel like a social responsibility to not only not use chemicals in my own yard so that we're healthy, but because I realize that the stuff and the choices that we make affect everybody. So if we pollute the groundwater, that's water everyone else has to drink too. And so I really want to be more part of the solution than part of the problem. And so just to help promote a healthy lifestyle and to make sure that, you know, we're doing everything that we can, that's what I really like to, organically garden.
I like that. You know, when somebody, I was asking some people about what category my podcast should be in, because it's in games and hobbies, and that just doesn't feel right to me. And they were asking me questions about it, and I was like, well, it's more of a lifestyle than it is anything, I think.
Exactly, yes.
You know, and Rodale's did just change their magazine from Organic Gardening to Organic Life. And I think, you know, I think a lot of us are feeling that way, that it is part of, and who else did I just interviewed Jill Hillhart from this Alternative Energy Resource Organization. And she was saying that one of the founders, I think his motto was, about, you know, actually living your values. Aero helps you live your values. And so you're a great example. And I love the way you're teaching people and sharing that on YouTube. And excellent. So then is that what inspired you to start using organic techniques? That experience when you were a kid? Or is there something else?
You know, that's what first kicked it off. But back in 08, I lost my grandma, my first grandma, my mom's mom, to breast cancer. And then in 09, I lost my other grandma to sepsis, but they linked it back to her picking it up in a hospital. And so that's what really, like, hit home, that I can't just take my health for granted. I mean, people around me do get sick, and they do die, and if we're not really diligent about our health and taking it into our own hands, you know, you never know what's going to happen in life. And so I really wanted to take my health seriously, and so that's why I wanted to start doing everything I can to stay healthy, and by, you know, organic foods and things like that when I'm not able to produce it myself, you know, like you were saying, it being a lifestyle. While I grow organically myself, I also live, of course, in Northern Colorado, so we can't grow all year. So when I do buy, I want to buy organic and, you know, things like that. So, but gardening is a fairly cheap hobby. I love it. So, yeah, it just made sense.
So then how did you learn how to grow, to garden organically?
You know, when I first started gardening, I didn't really realize it was organic. I just didn't use any kind of, you know, chemicals. I just didn't feel right about it. Wasn't sure what was in them, and I didn't want to use something I didn't really know what was, you know, what it was. And so I just grow that way. And it actually, you know, I don't think it's really even necessary to use all these pesticides and herbicides and all these things that people use. I mean, the plants are part of nature, and they've been a part of nature for so long that they know how to live and survive and thrive on their own. And so, yeah, I just kind of started that way from the beginning. And then when I did have, you know, a few issues along the way, I would just, you know, look up in the internet for a solution or something like that. And through trial and error, found things that would work.
Cool. So actually, the guest who I had on today, the cool thing I liked about his episode, his name was Bob Quinn, and he has Quinn Organic Farms, was he talked about the profitability of growing organic. And he's like on this mission to help convert big farmers to organic techniques. But I was just fascinated by how many hundreds of thousands of dollars he saves growing organically. So I like that part.
Yeah, definitely.
And you're the frugal green girl, so you must see some savings there too.
I definitely do. Yeah, definitely.
Do you want to tell us about any of that?
About what? I'm sorry.
About how going organically saves you money? Growing it organic, growing food?
Yeah, it saves a lot of money because you don't have to buy all the stuff. I mean, of course, I'm a small scale gardener. I just have a small, you know, what would most people consider a smaller yard. But, you know, definitely it saves a lot of money. But in the spring, I also produce seedlings, and there's a huge market for that right now because it's really difficult to find seedlings that are grown without being grown in greenhouses where they routinely use items like that. I mean, even back when I went to the college, they taught us that's what you just do, because if you don't do it, you're going to end up with, you know, infestations of, you know, insects and things like that. So that's just what you have to do. And I never really felt good about that. And so when I built my own greenhouse, I just was on a mission to make sure I was not using those types of things in my own. And eventually I got good enough at growing the seedlings that I sell them. And I'm always flooded with people coming to get them because there's just not a lot of producers around that provide that for home gardeners. You know, there's just the big box stores and they all use pesticides and herbicides. And so it's just, yeah, there's a big market for it, definitely.
Nice. I like it. So you're just selling them out of your home? Do you go to, like, farmers markets or any of that thing, or just?
Nope. I just set up a little, you know, sunshade in my driveway and post it on Craigslist.
Oh, cool.
People come. Yeah, it's great.
I think that, too, that that's a good way to go. And especially for small space, like I've told my husband that for years, that, and because especially we had little limited water. And I thought, you know, in the spring when we have the water, that would be the time for us to do it. Whereas like trying to, you know, produce lots of vegetables at the end of the year when you really have to water would be harder. But we never did get that to take off. I think he thinks we need bigger greenhouses even still than what little space we have. But I think that's true. It's very hard to find organic starts.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I was saying there's such a big market for it. And, you know, you really don't need a big greenhouse. I have the greenhouse that's attached to my house, the one I was telling you about. It's 4x10. I mean, that's only 40 square feet, and I grow hundreds of garden starts in that thing. So all that I use for my garden, many of my family and friends, I give them away, and then, of course, I sell, you know, hundreds more to the public. So, you know, you really don't need a lot of space. You can use space-saving techniques by using, like, shelving and things like that and stack them a little higher. And so, yeah, you can make even small things work.
Now, when do you start your starts?
You know, I start them on a little bit of a schedule. I start my tomatoes and peppers and things that take a long time, like 10 weeks out. And then, you know, as time goes on, I have a schedule for when I like to transplant them and when I add other plants. And so it's just a few weeks before I start the vining plants and everything. So you don't want to start everything all at once because then some stuff will get too big or, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely taken some trial and error and getting it all right to get it right down to, you know, the exact time frames you want to be starting everything.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's talk about your garden this year. Do you want to tell us about something that grew well this year?
Sure. You know, actually, I had a really good gardening year this year. I've heard from a lot of other Colorado gardeners that they've struggled a little bit this year, but I don't know if where I am, just things have gone better, but I feel like I really achieved a good balance. In the past, I've always grown maybe a little too much of something I don't use as much or not enough of things that we really want. And so this year I really got a good balance on it. And so we grew what we use the most. And so I was really happy about that. But yeah, many things did well in my garden this year. But I would say by far the best crop that I've had was tomatoes, which is great because I use tons of tomatoes and I love canning them. So yeah, really nice big crop of tomatoes.
All right. How about something you're excited to try different next year, something new you're going to try?
You know, something I would like to do differently next year is maybe control the spider mites better. This year, early in the season, I noticed a few of them, but I kind of ignored them, hoping it wouldn't, you know, be a big issue. But it ended up being a more of an issue than it has in the past. And I think it caused a bit of a reduction in the harvest for some of my crops. And so next year, I'm definitely going to try and be more diligent to find something that's going to work for that.
Okay. What kind of things do spider mites go after? They go after your tomatoes or what are they?
The main thing that they attack this year would be the beans, my pole beans and bush beans and things like that. But yeah, they do spread a little bit to the tomatoes and eggplants and everything. But for me, it's mainly just the beans.
Okay. How about something that didn't work so well? Oh, would that be your thing that didn't work so well this season?
Yeah, the beans. I wish I could have grown more, but you know, that's all right. There are up years and there are down years, but as gardeners, we're resilient.
Excellent. That's for sure. I know. I've been excited to like what I'm going to do different next year already since like July.
Oh, good.
Thinking, all right, I know what I did wrong already. How about something that you find is easy to grow and successful generally every time?
You know, that can vary a lot from one climate to the next, but for the most part, I think there's quite a few things that actually are pretty easy to grow. I think summer squash is pretty easy to grow. They're a heavy feeder, though, so you want to make sure to give them lots of compost. But lettuce is also really easy, radishes. Tomatoes are really good. I don't know if you saw that video, but I put out a video earlier this spring about ways you could plant them and whatnot, stuff that you can do while planting them that really ensure their success. And it definitely works. So,
do you want to give us a couple of suggestions or anything? Any?
Yeah. It's a pretty detailed video. How you know, there's different methods to plant them, and whether or not, you know, what type of soil you have can determine whether you want to put them, on their side or, you know, in a deep well method, and different types of things that you can add to help reduce some of their issues, like extra calcium can help with blossom end rot, which a lot of people have problems with, and things like that. So, yeah, there are a lot of things you can do to help them. But, Yeah, carrots are also really easy to grow. Kale and Swiss chard are really easy. Spinach, beets, peas, pumpkins, those are all really easy to grow. And there are lots of herbs that are easy to grow, too. Chives and mint, even green onions, cilantro. Basil is also another really good one. Everybody loves basil. And as far as trees go, I think apples are also really easy to grow. They're low maintenance. They really don't take a lot of water, and there's not a lot of pests that, you know, affect them. So, you know, they're a good versatile fruit. So those are a good one to start with for those who want to start maybe a small backyard orchard.
And they're prolific as far as I'm concerned. I had no idea when we planted like 14 fruit trees a few years ago. Mostly apples, and I had no idea how fast they would be producing as many apples as they're producing. I mean,
yeah, they're
we
really
just can't keep
good
up with.
Start with. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then somebody was talking about making some yummy sour cherry apple juice. That sounded really good, so I thought that would be a good way to use up our cherries because we have a pie cherry tree, and I don't end up making very many pies with those cherries. The other thing I was going to say is we can put the link to the video on the tomatoes in the show notes so people can find it because I want to watch that.
Okay.
That sounds really good.
Yeah.
And Blossom End Rot, I've heard a lot of people talking about that this year. So I think people will be excited to see that, learn about what you can do about that. That and the other one people have been talking? Powdery mildew. Got any secrets for getting rid of powdery mildew at all?
You know, my favorite way to get rid of powdery mildew is neem oil. It's from a neem tree. I think it grows, I'm not sure. But anyway, it's an organic gardening method. It's like an oil, and you just mix it with water and spray it on your plants. It's totally chemical-free, of course, and it's actually really effective at killing a lot of different issues that you can have arise. So, yeah, definitely that's my secret to helping get rid of powdery mildew.
Awesome. Okay, so make a spray, mix it with water. I didn't know that that's how you're supposed to use it. I think I've heard, does that get rid of mites too?
I think so. If I would have been more diligent in getting rid of my spider mites with it, it would have worked, I'm sure. But yeah, it's a really good garden cure-all, which is nice because then you just buy one organic gardening, you know, solution and it works on so many things. So then we don't have to be spending tons on everything, you know, a specific thing to get rid of this thing or a specific thing to get rid of that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just a one.
I'm wondering about your spider problem. Well, I don't know. I have like this spider spray I make where I mix like either you can just use like peppermint extract that you would put like food flavoring, or you can use like peppermint extract just with water, and that gets rid of like spiders in the house.
I wonder
if that would work for spiders out in the garden. Yeah, it works really good.
Yeah, I'll look into that, definitely. I still have my garden going, so I could definitely start experimenting with that anytime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so do you have something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow in your climate?
You know, for me, one of the hardest things I found to grow would be corn, and I don't even understand why, because there's so many expert gardeners around that grow fantastic corn year after year, but every single time I try to plant it, I either end up planting it too early and then we get snow on it and it doesn't like it, or it's too late and then it doesn't ripen in time, or, you know, just things like that. So yeah, for me, I would say, especially in a small backyard setting, I don't think corn is probably the best choice. And as far as trees go, I would say peaches. I would highly recommend people maybe stay away from trying to plant peach trees because there are so many things that can attack them between the borers and the aphids and other insects and a variety of fungal diseases that they can get. They're extremely difficult to grow organically. And even the ones I see at my farmer's market, you know, and talk to the people, you know, the professionals that grow them there organically, they even admit that they're extremely difficult to grow organically and it takes a fair amount of time and work. So, yeah, that would probably be one that's better left. Not to be discouraging, but if you have the time and work, certainly. But, it's been one of the most difficult fruit trees.
I figured those were like warm weather. I wouldn't even think of planting a peach tree here. What zone are you? We're zone 4, I think.
I'm in zone 5B. So I guess I'm a little warmer than you. Or this zone is a little warmer, yeah.
Okay. Do you have an activity that's your least favorite activity to do in the garden?
You know, I hate weeds. I know there's a lot of gardeners out there that love picking weeds and find it therapeutic and things like that. And I don't mind picking them out of my actual garden beds, but when they're growing everywhere else, like in the driveway and all these other things, they just drive me crazy. It feels like a never-ending battle. So yeah, weeding is definitely one of my least favorite activities.
So what do you do to get rid of your weeds, like in your driveway? Do you just pick them by hand?
You know, I'm actually putting together a spray. I do pick some by hand, but I'm putting together a spray that uses vinegar, soap, mm-hmm. and salt that helps keep any weeds from growing. And I've almost got it perfected. I'm really excited about it, but it burns away the leaves, and then the salt keeps them from growing back. And so that's, I'm really hoping it's going to work out. And it's natural, so there's obviously nothing that's going to pollute, so it's not like, you know, spraying Roundup everywhere. Yeah, hopefully that'll help a lot.
You see, you are a natural scientist. I'm experimenting and putting together a spray. I love it. and trying to perfect it. Just a natural inventor. Perfect.
Yeah.
I know. And you know, by far, I think the thing I have taken home from this podcast the most is how toxic lawns are. Like, I didn't even, like, it's just, like, this side thing that's come along through my podcast that I never really realized how people who are putting, like, weed and feed or Roundup or any kind of weed killer on their lawn and then letting either their kids or even their pets, the dangers that those chemicals can have.
Yeah, you know, and it's kind of strange. Our country doesn't, you know, recognize it as being hazardous. They've labeled it as potentially carcinogenic, whereas in other countries they've done experiments and they've proven that it is carcinogenic, and yet for some reason, I don't know, we just seem to turn a blind eye to it. And it's not just that, it's a lot of other chemicals that we use in our, you know, production of our food and just all these other things. And so I just don't understand why we don't, I don't know, recognize a lot of the research that the other countries use. On GMOs also, a lot of countries ban them or require labeling because they aren't proven safe, and yet here we are, you know, planting them and saying that they're exactly the same. They're substantially equivalent, and I just don't believe that to be the case.
Mm-hmm. And then I've had a few other guests also talk about that if you're going to go with the we haven't proved that they're dangerous yet, that other countries are like, well, when you can prove that they are definitely not dangerous, then we'll let you. But we're not going to go with that since we haven't proved it 100%.
Exactly.
You know, we're not going to wait and find out. Like, you need to prove for without a shadow of a doubt before you can use that here.
Exactly. So, why not, like, assume that they're not until you can prove they are, rather than assume they are until you find out later that they're not safe?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't
when you're talking about people's health.
Exactly.
All right. Well, on a more brighter note, what is your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Oh, harvest. I love the harvest. That's what it's all about. I love letting my kids out to just, you know, have their fill on everything that we've grown out there, and it really makes them happy, and which, of course, makes me happy, and it makes all the work worth it. So it's all, that's what it's all about, is that harvest. I just love going out and harvesting it all and bringing it in and then turning it into something for dinner or canning it or whatever. I just love it.
What's your kids' favorite thing to eat out there?
Probably the tomatoes. I always plant at least a couple of little cherry tomatoes for them, so they can just pick and eat all they want. But yeah, in addition to those, probably the little mini peppers that we planted this year and the raspberries. Of course, I go crazy for those too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. And my grandkids always are after the carrots. Do your kids go after the carrots too, I bet, huh?
They do, yes. They're so sweet when they're homegrown. They don't taste anything like grocery store carrots.
I know. And I just think they think it's the coolest thing to pull it out of the ground and get to eat it right there, you know?
Exactly.
How about, want to tell us about the best crop you ever grew? Was there a year that things were just so prolific you couldn't give it all away?
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, we bought our house here 11 years ago. And so in the spring of 2005, I planted a few trees. And I babied them along for several years, of course. And then finally in 2010, they started producing some fruit, but not a lot. And then in 2011, they started producing even more fruit. And then 2012, we were just drowning in fruit. I didn't know that, you know, semi-dwarfs could produce so much fruit. It was great, actually. it's really good problem to have, really. Mm-hmm. But anyway, mm-hmm. So we were giving them away to our family, our friends. We still had an abundance to eat and to can, dehydrate. It was wonderful. I just loved it.
Nice. Yeah. And, you know, the thing about trees that's nice that you kind of hit on earlier is that they're, you put them in the ground and then they don't take a lot of maintenance and then they're going to be there for a long time as compared to, you know, carrots or beets that you have to plant every single year. A tree is just going to be there and keep producing and growing and giving you more. So if you don't have a lot of time for gardening, sometimes a fruit tree is a great way to start. And
that's
they're
true.
Fun to climb.
That's true.
How about the best gardening advice you've ever received?
You know, I would say growing your own food is like planting your own money. I'm not even sure where I heard that first, but it was really like clicked when I heard that. It's like, it's true. You have to go to the grocery store and everybody buys food, of course, but when you plant, you know, food and then you're eating that instead, it's almost like printing your own money, because now you don't have to pay that money at the grocery store and you could save it and use it for something else. And so it's really a good feeling. I really like that.
Mm-hmm. And especially with the high cost of like buying organic produce, a lot of the time it's really like printing some big money.
Exactly. You're right. Yep.
Have you entered a fair? Ever entered a
fair? I have not. Nope.
How about a favorite tool? If you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
You know, gosh, I can't even remember how long ago it was, but many years ago, way before I was even a homeowner, I found this little spade shovel with a rounded tip on it. I'm not even sure where I found it. I think it was in the street somewhere, and I couldn't find the owner to it, so I just took it home. But anyway, it was the first garden tool I ever had. I didn't obviously pay anything for it because I found it, and it's been with me ever since then, and I use it for everything. It's not like a traditional wide shovel with a pointy tip. It's kind of skinnier and longer, and I've planted trees, and I use it in the garden. I mean, I use it for post holes, and I just love that thing. It's like my gardening best friend.
Aww. So,
I know,
is it... It's
shovel.
Not like a hand shovel. It's like a long-handled shovel?
Yeah, it's a long-handled shovel.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Works great.
I don't know why when you first started talking, I was picturing like a little hand shovel, you know, just like a foot long. But you're talking like a full...
It goes up to about my waist. It's not real long, but it's not real short either.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, so I kind of took this question out for a while, but I'm going to put it right back in because I am right smack in the middle of this right now. And this question is, do you have any tips for like eating or harvesting vegetables or fruit on time? Because once again, I have like 6,000 cucumbers in my fridge and squashes, and I've been bringing them to work and I've been giving them to friends, but it just seems like I'm still have piles of food I can't do enough with.
I understand. Well, one of my things I do is try to preserve it as soon as I can, you know. So if I know I have a whole bunch of cucumbers, you know, you can make them into pickles or something like that. Or, you know, of course, my kids, they're just like eating machines. So whatever I can't preserve, I just give to them. And I know I'm giving them something healthy anyway. So, yeah.
Yep. Our problem with pickles this year, my husband did can a bunch of pickles, but the problem we've had is the dill wasn't ready. And then,
oh, really?
And so the pickles were ready and we couldn't find any dill anywhere. And our dill wasn't ready yet either. So that kind of ran into some problems. And now I think he's canned like, I don't know, 30 quarts of pickles. And we still have, but he planted like a mini farm this year. We're trying to like figure out, you know, how to, you know, start like a CSA and do things like that. But this is our first year. So, I mean, that is part of our problem this year, but, yeah. And I've kind of tried to dedicate myself to harvesting more and forcing myself to go down to the garden more when things are ready. I've done a little better, but I still have a fridge full of veggies.
Really?
Have
you tried selling them?
Well, it's not really enough to sell. And the farmer's market, I can't really make it to I don't know, with my work schedule and stuff, I haven't been able to make it to the farmer's market. And I just, it doesn't seem to be like that much enough that it would make it worth it for me to sit at the farmer's market for 2 hours. Plus, the day the farmer's market is not always the day. Last Wednesday, he was like, you should go to the farmer's market today. It was like the first time, you know, and I don't know, to just go for one day out of the summer. I don't know. I know. And then this other guest of mine was talking about taking it to the food pantry. But of course, you know, is the food pantry like when I go to town, it's kind of like, all right, I got to go to town. I'm going to go right now. There's no real pre-plan. I don't know. Maybe I need to put it in my calendar. People always say what gets scheduled gets done. So maybe that's what I should do.
Yeah, that's a good opportunity to do something good, too, and give it away for free. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you have a food pantry in your area, that would be a great choice.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about secrets for preserving food and making it last? Like you said, you do some canning or dehydrating. Any kind of cool tips there that listeners could go with?
You know, everything, you know, is a little bit different. And so some stuff is best for freezing. Some is best for drying, of course, or canning. But one of my favorite ways to preserve food would be dehydrating, because it doesn't require any electricity like keeping into the freezer does. And when you use like a solar dehydrator, I have a couple of different methods I use for that. A solar box dehydrator that I just put out on another video also that uses a little solar fan, so it's totally off-grid. It dries it off-grid, and then, of course, it stores without any electricity either. And then a greenhouse, off-season greenhouse, when you close it up, can get really, really hot. So it's like a giant walk-in solar dehydrator also. So, of course, if you have a greenhouse, you can double duty it and use it for that too. And then dry it again with no electricity, which is also, of course, good
now,
for the environment.
Is it because you have a fan in your greenhouse? Like it doesn't get moist in there? Somehow it stays dry enough that it dries the food?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have a fan in there. I don't usually put one in, but you can put one in there if you wanted. But I just crack the windows just a little bit, and not all of them, just maybe one. And for the most part, close it up, and no, it works pretty good. Once the sun is out and beating down on it, it gets really hot, and you know there's natural convection in it anyway. The cooler air is going to obviously move to the top, and then it'll go out the vents and things like that, so it'll keep it moving and it'll dry it out pretty well.
Okay. What's your favorite food to dry? Is there like something that you like to dry that's super easy or convenient or no fail?
Yeah, apples. Everybody likes apple snacks anyway, so I try to make them lots of different ways. Slices, you can put some cinnamon on them and make them little cinnamon apple snacks. My kids love those. Chop them really finely, and then I put them in our oatmeal and stuff like that. And so we can never have too many dried apples. Since the trees are usually so prolific, there's always lots of them we need to do something with anyway. So why not preserve them now for when we're eating them when the snow's outside and it's freezing cold?
I like that. And do you have to put anything on them, like... Or you just plain apple slices and just dry them?
You know, they do brown a little bit if you dry them that way, although that's not necessarily bad for them. But if you don't like that, what I would just do is take a bowl of like a cup or so of water and then add a teaspoon or two of lemon juice to it. And then when you dip the apples in that, it'll make it so that they don't oxidize. But if you feel like, you know, you want to add a little sweetener to it, of course you could add, you know, a teaspoon or two again of honey, which also adds nice flavor to it. Or you could just put the cinnamon right in that water. So when you dip them in that mixture, that's how I make my cinnamon apple snacks.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So mix like a little cinnamon, a little lemon, and some water.
Yep.
Okay.
And then dip the apple slices in there and you're good to go.
I like that. And when you dip, like, do you dip each slice by hand or do you put them, like, in a strainer or something? Like, is that time-consuming or?
You know, I have a slotted spoon I use, but I just real quick dip them in there and then just throw them on the racks or wherever I'm going to be drying them and set them out. And, of course, I have kid helpers. That also makes it faster.
Oh, cool. And then what a great thing. Anything that you can get the kids involved in the kitchen,
exactly.
I like.
That's true.
Sure.
And then they help work for it. So when they're eating the snacks, they remember having done the work for it and helping out. And so they earned it.
Mm-hmm. How about, got any special techniques for cooking weird or unusual foods? Or I kind of changed this around also. Do you have any unusual or weird cooking methods for normal foods?
You know, I don't really have any specific techniques or anything. But one of the good resources I use is food.com. Because if I end up with maybe a huge crop of something or some sort of thing I haven't used in the past, you can actually put in a specific ingredient, and then it comes with all these recipes that use that ingredient. So instead of us eating, you know, roasted beets over and over and everybody getting sick of it, I can make them into a salad or, you know what I'm saying, lots of different ways to cook the same thing. That way we're not getting sick of it if we end up with, you know, a bumper crop of something we didn't anticipate getting so much of.
Mm-hmm. Somebody else recommended that, and that was a great website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really enjoy food.com.
I know. I have all these cookbooks on my shelves, and sometimes I think, am I ever going to use these? Because I'm just going to go to the internet. Although I do, you know, some of your favorite recipes, like my pie crust, I just automatically always go there and things. But yeah, it's fun to look for new recipes. How about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden?
You know, I have lots of favorite recipes, but if I had to choose, you know, one that I like the best, it would probably have to be my pickle recipe. Because I'm a home gardener, and a lot of the recipes out there call for a certain amount of fruit in order to make a batch of pickles. You know, you need 5 pounds or 10 pounds. Well, what if you only have a few in the beginning and then you have 20 pounds in the end of the season, you know? Mm-hmm. So the pickle recipe that I made a couple of years ago, is per jar. So if you have one jar you want to make, you can make the one, or you can make 5 or 10 or 20 jars just as easily. You just measure all the ingredients per jar, and then you can make either a small batch or a huge batch. And then you don't have to let some of them go bad while you're waiting for them, you know, to get in full swing and whatnot. And I've gotten a lot of good feedback on that. Not just, you know, the people in my life, I've given them to my brother, my sister-in-law, my kids, my husband, of course, but a lot of good feedback, you know, from the people who are trying it out over the video too, being like, oh, these are so tasty and good. And so, yeah, that would probably be my favorite recipe.
All right. We'll put a link to that in the show notes too. How about a favorite internet resource? Is yours YouTube or something else, or?
You know, for new gardeners, I would highly recommend another YouTube channel called Grow Organic Peaceful Valley. While they do some advertising for their own products, they sell on their internet and whatnot, but they have a lot of how-to videos, and they're specific to a crop. So, and they are all dedicated to growing organically, which is fantastic. So if you wanted to learn how to grow, you know, pole beans, they tell you exactly step by step, here's what you do to the soil, here's how you plant them, here's how you take care of them, here's how you know when to harvest them. It gives you the whole thing, you know, on each specific crop, you know, blueberries and just everything. Pretty much you name it, and they've got a video out on how to grow it step by step from start to finish. So, yeah, for new, you know, gardeners that may not know, you know, exactly how or when to plant things or how to take care of them, I would highly recommend that YouTube channel.
Nice. Yeah. And they sell seeds too, don't they? I think
they do. And they're like all organic seeds, and they're all dedicated non-GMO. And so, yeah, they're pretty high quality, I hear.
Do you know where they're located?
I want to say California, but I'm not entirely sure.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. How about, do you want to share with listeners? I kind of like my last questions about if there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about, or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel, frugal green girl, is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
Okay, so I think a lot of the chemicals that we're using are probably the biggest issue that we have today. And since we can't really enact change overnight, or, you know, it can feel overwhelming to try to take on these corporate giants and things like that, one thing that we can do is, like they say, vote with our dollars and just start buying the foods that are grown organically and don't use chemicals. And so we can send a message to them that those types of the conventional ways of growing things is not the types of products that we want. We want things that are grown in a healthy manner, in a sustainable manner, you know, using resources wisely. We don't want them poisoning us with these chemical products and things like that. And so by changing our habits, we can send a very clear message to them that this is what we want, and, you know, those things that we don't want are rejected, basically. So, more taking our health into our own hands and helping them to know what it is that we really want out of life for ourselves, our planet, and, you know, our families.
Mm-hmm. You know, I had a guest on, Angie Schneider from Schneider Peeps, and she talked about that people really have to be willing to put out a little extra and support local farmers more and be willing to pay that to show exactly what you're saying, that we need to vote with our dollars. And exactly. I think that is true. It's hard. And just, I think sometimes you just have to kind of like, you know, do as much as you can when you can. Maybe you can't buy all organic when you go to the store, but you know, if you can buy an organic thing here and there. And sometimes the organic option is cheaper even. Like a lot of times I find organic lemons are cheaper than regular lemons.
That's
for some weird reason. And on occasion, you know, there's certain things, or like I know our health food store, their bananas are always really comparable to the regular. So it doesn't feel like you're, you know, spending an outrageous amount to buy the organic choices. So,
and you
I
know,
think
as more people, go ahead. As more people are choosing those types of options too, it'll help bring the price down, because when it's kind of a niche market that, you know, not a lot of people are buying, of course the prices are going to be higher. But as more and more people are choosing those, you know, more and more people are going to produce them, and they'll just more become the mainstream, and they won't be as expensive. So if we stick with it, it really will get better.
Okay. So do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Yeah, I guess I give you a quote that I was always told by my late grandfather. He always told me, nothing ventured, nothing gained. And it's really true. I mean, even a failure is success in a way. You know, we've succeeded at finding out what doesn't work. So really just getting out there and trying something, and, you know, in the end, I think you'll find that you will gain something. You gain experience, health, and yeah.
That is so true. Excellent. And I just think a lot, like I always, like I taught kindergarten for quite a few years, and I always think, like, you know, when they took the blocks out of kindergarten, that kids need that. You know, not all kids go to preschool, and if they don't have those experiences of the blocks falling down and building them back up again, they're, you know, every time they fall down, the kids get smarter. They're right away, they're trying again, and you know, figuring it, that's how they're going to figure out what works. And gardening's the same way. And it's kind of fun, and it's fun when your experiments work. And yeah, sometimes it's a little disheartening when something doesn't work. But I think more often than not, way more things will work in your garden, and your, you know, maybe one plant's not going to work, but you're also getting, you know, your green beans and your corn and your carrots might work one year, but your tomatoes didn't work that year, or, you know, vice versa. And, you know, it's not like, it's very hard for me to imagine somebody whose whole garden didn't succeed.
Exactly. So why not get out there and try it? And then whatever does work out, then, you know, great.
All right. Well, do you want to share with listeners how to connect with you, how to find you on YouTube or anything like that?
Sure. I mean, you know, you can search for my name, Frugal Green Girl, all one word. I'm also on Facebook, and that's pretty much it. Pretty simple.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for coming on today and sharing your expertise and everything with us. And I know listeners are really going to enjoy this, and I hope they'll go check out your YouTube channel and like your Facebook page. And we'll see you over there, because everybody knows I love Facebook, even if I don't have enough time to get there.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And it will link right to the show notes and all that we've talked about on today's show. If you like what you've heard today, we'd love it if you would head over to iTunes and give us a hopefully 5-star review. It really helps us get found and share the knowledge with other listeners. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.